Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
When I think back about the start of the cannabis sector in terms of public companies back in 2014 and even beyond that, there are a handful of guys who were really active in the space behind the scenes putting deals together. One of those was a guy by the name of Braden Sutton. Braden had his mitts in a couple of early stage deals, most notable of which was Supreme, and then eventually got enough clout in the business to start his own deal down in Nevada, which was at the time called Friday Nights, ticker symbol TGIF. Over time, Braden looked at the landscape and thought, what was the hot ticket at the time, which was growing a bunch of weed as quickly as possible, wasn't really a good long-term strategy. And indeed, even being based out of Vegas, calling your company Friday Nights wasn't really hitting the sector that he thought was going to be where the growth was. So a change came to 1933 Industries, 1933 being when Prohibition ended, and a lot of branding aimed at people who were either premium activist enthusiast types or people who were non-enthusiast types, who were maybe the older crowd that was looking for something less to get them freaked out on a Friday night and more to get comfortable with sleep. Sutton's company, 1933 Industries, has done all the things that one would expect a company in this business to do and got absolutely no respect from the market for it. As you look around and see companies like Aurora and Afria and Kronos and Canopy struggling with their massive market caps and their high expense ratios based around those massive grows that they have, 1933 has been doing the other thing. It's been down in Nevada in the U.S. market creating brands that are for sale in every dispensary in Nevada and registering some genuine revenues. Where they've built out grows, it's been to make sure that they have product supply for their own lines. They've been responsible with their money. The balance sheets are not profitable yet, but not far from. And when you look at how much money is being lost in other areas of the sector, it's quite astounding to see a market cap as low as you find with TGIF, a balance sheet that's as close to profitable in a jurisdiction that is as welcoming as Nevada, with brands that are penetrating the market in places like Planet 13 and MedMen that are their competitors on the public space. I really like this company. And so we reached out to Chris Reventish, CEO of the company, to tell us a little bit about what it's like to be doing all the right things and still be treated like a redheaded stepchild. I think what you'll find is what I've often found with this company, and that is it's at some point going to get some respect. It hasn't got it yet because the market has been looking at shiny things. But now that the market is looking for runway, is looking for low risk, is looking for access to capital as needed or no access needed, TGIF is in a really interesting place. So let's take the interview with Chris Reventish.
This is the position that every other cannabis company out there, if they could hit the rewind button a year, would have changed things to get into, right?
Oh, absolutely. But we did it differently, though.
Yeah.
We focused on building a company first.
Right. And that's something that you didn't get any real respect for in the market over the last year or so. Like it's been undervalued because all you did was go out and actually build products and earn revenue and not blow out the marketing budget.
Yeah, if you look at our year over year growth, it's like 43% year over year growth. And that was done organic.
Yeah.
Not marketing spend, that's not buying any revenue, that's not moving into a new facility, that's just us growing our business. But if you think about it, for a company just to grow their business organically year over year like that, it's amazing. I guess what a fucking brilliant industry we're in where a company can actually do that.
Our grandparents would have said that, but that, you know, it's the old Chris Rock thing of you know, where he says, I hear guys saying, oh, I spend time with my kids. And it's like, motherfucker, you're supposed to spend time with your kids. Like, as a company, you're supposed to grow the business. Like, that's what our grandparents would have defined a company as.
Now that we've done that, we've shown it, we've proved it, that we're true operators. You know, you can walk into any dispensary here in Nevada. You've got MedMen, 13, and Reef, we've got Harvest and Amethyst, you name it. Walking to anywhere there's sensories and ask for 1933 products, and they've got massive shelf space. We've proven it. Like, our products are prevalent. Like, you don't have to take our word for it.
Right.
Go in and buy it and try it, and you'll fucking understand why we're growing.
Right.
Making products to buy the price right. It's a great experience all the way around. We're almost in every dispensary. Like, it's, we did it, right? So now that we did it, now we have a high demand. Now let's spend money on increasing our footprint,
mm-hmm.
spend money on increasing our infrastructure, and grow as a company really supposed to grow.
Right.
Backwards. And let's spend $100 million on a 450,000 square foot greenhouse, and then hope after we build it out to perfection that sales come in.
When you put it like that, it sounds ridiculous. And yet this is what the entire industry has been doing with the backing of financial institutions.
And now you see people missing projections. They're missing the numbers. They're writing off millions and millions and making nothing. And now you're seeing the industry fall out. And everyone's like, well, what happened? What happened to the industry? Well, the bubble burst, guy.
Yeah.
You can't live in this overvalued fantasy and not perform. That's not real world.
I like that the MedMen guys have paid their executives in bonuses more than your market cap.
Almost more than their annual revenue.
Yeah, yeah. But only by $1 million.
Like 20 million, yeah.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
And yet they're still out there. You know, guys are still giving them money. I mean, the terms that they're getting are terrible. They're gonna lose everything. But, you know, you still see guys in like Facebook investor groups saying, you know, what do you think of MedMen at these levels? Like, it doesn't seem like there's any risk. And you're just like, dude, like, have you looked at any balance sheet of any company? Like, I look at something like Supreme, right? Like, Supreme, close to profitability, you know, good product, but it just peril in terms of the basics of telling their story, of getting people out there to trust them, because what the market is still looking for, even in the midst of all this crisis, is hype and ridiculousness. It's not a good product. It's not a good brand. It's not balance sheet. It's just who's got the ad playing during Stern.
Yeah, well, you think about the investor, right? And you look at, you know, low risk, medium risk, and high risk. Well, cannabis stocks have been and will be for some while a high risk play,
right?
And what type of mentality of an investor is a high risk?
True.
We're gamblers. Right? We're gamblers. And so, you know, if you think that way, that the really smart money, especially in the U.S., is in it. And they're not in because it's federally illegal, number one, but they're not in yet. So our people who are putting money in are gamblers. They're looking for a quick flip. They're looking to trade on some news and then buy and get out. You know, it's not a lot. You know, I look at our Novo list and, you know, us and everybody else has lost, you know, over 50% of retail investors are gone
mm-hmm.
in the last 90 days. And it's that reason. It's, hey, we came in, we gambled, we tried it, market's gone, we're going to go pull out, try something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're going to see this as maybe a wake-up call and say, okay, this was a fun ride for the last few years of gambling and overvaluing and everything, but now reality is now let's look at balance. Let's look at true assets. Let's look at what they did with the money. Right? And that's why I think 1933 is going to really have that opportunity to shine and say, you know, look, they did it right. If you watch my revenue over the next 12 months, you're just going to be floored at the amount of revenue that was going to come in from our new operations compared to the money we spent doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came from, you know, the illicit market or the medical market before it was ever. And back then, you know, you bought a pound of weed for $1,000, $2,000, and you sold it for $3,000 or $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a business model. That's like a real business model.
Right.
When did we get away from that? Like, you know, what happened in our lives that made us get away from that type of model? It's super simple, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've spent, you know, we've raised to date, it's under $40 million. with that, we built over $16 million our massive, got $18 million in the bank, and we did $18 million in revenue. There is no debt except for some debentures. And, you know, a pathway, very quick pathway to profitability now that we've got everything in line. You know, we're self-sustained. So, you know, that's the place it is. We're not a med man. We're not another one of these companies that have spent massive amounts of money on ourselves, ridiculous spend. Like, I know the industry, it doesn't take that much money to make money.
That's the thing that's really stunning about this is I remember when it was all starting to just become legal and everyone was looking at it like, look, if my dumbass college buddy can make money growing it in a closet, then imagine how much money we could make if we built factories around this thing. And from that moment forward, it just all went to the bigger, the better, and the business will just follow. I've never seen that exist in any other industry. Like, I don't know if there were tulip factories back in the day, you know, but like it just seems like everything started at phase three instead of the usual phase one, phase two of like, let's go out there and see if people actually want our product. You guys went the other way and got punished for it. Like, quite literally in the market, your valuation is already down, whereas others are coming down. Do you think that will realistically change in the short term where, you know, you put your next results out, people go, ooh, that's nice, and start actively buying back in?
No, we would hope so, but, you know, the industry whole, we're not done. Like, we haven't shed enough blood yet.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as an industry, and unfortunately, our stock price is a result of others' poor decisions in the industry, like a few bad apples ruined it for the whole group.
Yep.
So we see this last release from Net, okay, and we see all these others that have these releases coming up. Well, especially on the Canadian side, where everybody a year ago was like, I just built the largest greenhouse in America, billion square feet, and we're going to harvest, and blah, blah, blah. And it's a $2 billion a year market, and every single person out there just did a million square feet. Like, you're not going to sell it.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to hit those numbers. But we're not going to see that until the spring.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to happen until the spring. So if you think all these other companies are going to announce over the next few months of spending IAD numbers, and then you've got the Canadian side this spring that's like, oh, you know, we're not going to hit our numbers because the market is horribly saturated. You know, there's still some blood to be shed. I think that, you know, I think we found our bottom. 1933, and I think it's up from here for us because it's not going to be the same as what everybody else is. So over the next 6 months, we're going to start really seeing the increase of our revenue. We got our first harvest down our learning facility in December. Our new extraction lab for THC comes down. Starts operating the first quarter, the hemp lab as well. California starts operating next month. We'll see revenue coming out of there. So we're going to see the opposite, where the money that we've spent, I don't spend any more money on it, so the money that we've spent already, we're going to start seeing the revenue come in the next 6 months. So I think when you see that switch, where everyone's still excessive spending, the revenues are going down, but we're not spending at all, the revenues are climbing, I think that's where we're really going to see our swing up.
Interesting. And even if it doesn't, you know, even if the world continues to burn, with $18 million in the bank, like a worst case scenario, you've got a lot of runway there.
Not just that, but I'm already seeing it. Like, I can start picking up companies for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
Because people are emailing me saying, hey, this went into California, blew $10 million. We can't operate anymore. Do you guys want to fire distressed assets? No, I'm going to wait six, 12 more months. This is going to be even worse. I get for a far better price. So not only are we in a good position cash-wise, but, you know, come this next summer, I'm going to be in a position to really, you know, take our expertise and pinpoint some gems that didn't quite make it and take them on for pennies on the dollar.
So you're going into robber baron mode. You're into like, let's take over the world rather than show them how it's done.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, to me, that seems like the smart guys, the Mark Lustigs of the world, you know, Origin House, were out there essentially running that business model from the outset. Just like, you know, sure, you need a little bit of money. We'll take a piece of your operation here and we'll buy more if we decide we want to. And then when you really, really, really need us, we'll take it over for a song and flip it for what it's really worth. Like, there seems to me that even in the best market, there was opportunities out there to pick and choose from guys who'd overextended themselves. Now we're headed into the worst market. That's going to be 80% of the guys out there.
If you look at what we've done as far as moving into other states, how we did it, and then brands. So we know the industry is headed brand-centric. So it's all about the brand. You see in territories or states that allow direct-to-consumer delivery, that new consumers may be walking into a dispensary two or three times, getting educated, trying a product, once they get comfortable with the product they like, they order from their home, you know, driven this direct to consumer. So we're seeing a shift in the cannabis industry that way. So we're very focused on our brand. So we've partnered up with a lot of amazing brands. One thing that we're going to start doing is we're going to start pulling these brands in-house as we understand, like, hey, look, people are loving it. They love the culture. They love the product behind it. It's selling well. It's able to move into other markets. Let's buy it. So it's a huge trial run for us with the licensing deals that we put together. We say, hey, let's work together. Let's make sure that we're cohesive before we go and we get married, right? Let's think a little bit and figure this out. And I think it's so important. There's this fear, it's FOMO in this industry, like, the tenth fold. Like, people think, like, if you don't make it, if you don't get first to market, if you're not a first mover, you're going to get destroyed by everybody. That's so wrong. Like, there's new cosmetic companies joining the beauty industry.
Of course. Yeah.
And they're making, like, it's not going to end. Like, cannabis, like, if you're not the first to market in Michigan or Florida, like, life's not over. Like, if anything, like, let them figure it out and then slowly work their way in, like, a little bit.
So. Yeah.
We're taking that approach too. So, you know, we've got a lot of opportunities from the partners that we've got. From everything we got going on, we're in an incredible position as a company. The market doesn't realize that today. You know, at some point, Chris, they're going to have to. It's just
going to be math at some point.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. Right?
So, look, we're 20 cents US on the OTC. A fucking deal. You know, our directors in our company have been buying, we're all in.
Right.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast with your host, Chris Perry.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
It's kind of a crazy to imagine that the worth of your business is being paid to a couple of executives in another company as just retention bonuses. Like, it's madness. Yeah. But you mentioned branding a few times, and I wanted to sort of harken in on that. One thing I noticed about your brands every time I've seen them, and I see them a lot because you're at every single conference, and every conference there's a lineup of people looking to see what you got on the table. Your brands are good. And I think that I sort of put them next to the Rubicon Organics brands a while back as being the top two around. Rubicon has sort of folded its tent a lot in the US side of things and focusing now on Canada, where brands barely exist as a necessity, which leaves you guys pretty much out there swinging as the established market play in the US for grown up products that people will consume, not just as a niche, but as health products. You know, I would imagine that your products look like they should be on store shelves, not just in dispensary.
Yeah. And it's like, you look at us with, the 70 million market cap, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And let me just rattle these off to you. So it's our partners, Tony Hawk, DNA Genetics, Jack Hare, his new brand, Lawn, Denver Dabco, we've got our own house brand, Hannah Hemp and AMA. Like, we've got some massive names in the industry in this little company. And we've proven that we can grow brands. and development. So where those brands sit today compared to what our brands are going to be next year is enormous. Mm-hmm. The ones that we're looking at. Now, we're very particular in partnering with. Like, you have to have a culture in this industry or in this space somehow. Like, Taylor Swift wanted to come out with a big band that might not be for us. We get hit up all the time by celebrities and ex-athletes, and it's like, no, look, we this is not a play for us to put a name on a package to get rich quick.
Right.
Like, we want to build into the culture of this industry. People buy products from companies that have culture because they believe in the culture, they believe in the brand, they believe in the ethos, they believe in the quality of the product.
Right.
So we're very selective on how we do that, who we work with, the whole process behind it, and that every product we put on the shelf, like, it causes an effect that people are looking for. Like, people who consume cannabis, they get something out of it, mm-hmm. whether it's for relaxation or for relief or for anxiety or sleep. Like, if you consume one of our products and we want it to do something, so we don't put a product out on the shelf unless it actually does something for somebody.
Right.
And that's been really the key. Like, quality will prevail in products. Like, there's a new CBD brand every 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
In this country. And if you order every single one of their gel caps and you open up the bottle and pour it all into a bowl, you couldn't tell who came from who.
Mm-hmm.
All the same manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone's just slapping something, their name on a bottle, take advantage of the market. And we've gone the other route where we're saying, let's create products that are different, that are sustainable, that are unique, that help people. How do we use the product? But a company behind the product that has values and morals and ethics and is developed and involved in the culture, developing the culture and leading the charge of 1933 as a whole. I mean, that's what will survive. Culture will outpace structure any day of the fucking day.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I see what you're saying. When I heard that that CSI had a deal with Kevin Smith to market a brand under his celebrity name, I thought, well, that's one of the top three guys that are associated with weed out there in the celebrity space. But nothing's really come of it because, one, you also need distribution. You need to get out there into the dispensaries and not one at a time, but en masse, which is something that you guys clearly have. And two, you need to create something around that celebrity rather than just hacking that guy's name on the side of things. There needs to be a reason for people to say, well, I'm going to have that guy's face on my coffee table. And for the most part,
biggest failure in the industry that just confirms everything you're saying is Danville, Darien, and Ignite. You went out, raised a bunch of money, you $20 million or whatever on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
on the product. It's a white label deal from Select. And charges $5 more for it. And the culture behind what he represents is exactly opposite.
Yeah. Right.
And it's been an absolute disaster from Jump Street.
Mm-hmm. And, well, this is, you know, you can kind of go along the line. I remember the Trailer Park Boys doing it with OGI that's come to zero, and Leafs by Snoop, which has been turned into three letters in a tiny font on the side of government approved packaging. Like the celebrity effect has been almost zero effect, almost along the line. But what you're saying is right, is that you have to have a cultural touchstone, a reason for that product to exist. You can't just say this bong is approved by Tommy Chong. Do you think that people have given up on celebrity as a result of this?
No, I still think that we just partnered with the godfather of skateboarding, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you look at skateboarding as a culture, it's very, very tied into the cannabis culture.
Sure.
Right? And then you look at the effect that an extreme sport has on them, and then what CBD and do to counteract that, right? So really interesting with Tony, you know, he came to us, he wanted to try some products. One of our employees is a pro skater, worked with him in the past without a product. And he tried other people's products. He said, well, you know, I've got to tell you, like, your CBD products actually work. They help me in your life. Like, I can stand behind it.
Mm.
And so, you know, skateboarding started kind of the extreme sport, right? Skateboarding kind of crosses over culturally.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the clothes skateboarding. I mean, Nike's skateboarding and Adidas skateboarding divisions are massive now, right? So we really were very selective on how we entered in that kind of action sports, and we chose skateboarding. We kind of saw where, you know, brand and culture had developed in it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a part of celebrity that can help move the needle with self-product. But again, it has to be done almost organically, and it has to be done with, like, the real intent. But we did that with Tony Hawk. It wasn't
a Gene Simmons deal.
No, let it slap his name on something and take a royalty from it.
Right.
Really, like, hey, this works. I believe in this. Let's develop a product specifically for it. Let's use my resources and my outreach or distribution. Sell the product. You guys use yours. And this will be a very good partnership. So, that's the plan. So if there's other celebrities out there that have the same kind of cultural background or attention for space, like, it'll work, but it can't be just put a name on the bottom of it.
Mm, for sure. Look, I think that you probably, it appears you're taking the same approach to endorsements as you've taken to the establishment of the company, that, to do it the right way over the long haul rather than just go and splash out some money on a billboard. And I think that grown-up perspective is something that, if I think about the people I know who've invested in your company in my circle, they're all people who've been there for the long haul, and they're maybe a little bit older, maybe, you know, a little bit slower to get into the cannabis sector, but what they're seeing with you guys is something that, I can say this knowing all of my conflicts and bias because you're a client, but also the fact that we're really bloody happy to have you as a client, because from the outset, from the moment the TGIF brand was shed in favor of one that actually resonated with the culture, you guys have done exactly what I would hope to do if I were running a cannabis company. And I think that's going to pay off in the end in spades, in ways that the Canopies of the world and the guys that chase Canopy with the same mindset are never really going to be able to broach. They're all large industrial corporations rather than cultural corporations that understand that their customer requires something a little bit different from person to person rather than just one product to stone them all.
We hear it at all the shows, the same sentiment. It's, hey, all the negative stuff, you can go read about us on Boldboard.
Yeah.
Right? But then all the real investors walk up to us and say, hey, got into you guys, but we're down, but I believe in this company 100%
mm-hmm.
for the long run. Like, I have so many investors that are, like, here to ride the ride with us because they believe what we're doing, and it's super motivated, right?
So, mm-hmm.
We turn down the noise from the guys screaming in the stadium what they think that should happen, but they've never read a balance sheet in their life.
Right.
And we were really focused on it. And that's why I say, look, the Safe Banking Act is going to pass, and it's going to allow for some better institutional money. And they don't want the noise, deal with 80% of these marijuana companies out here.
They're sure.
The real deal, right? One investment. So that's going to be huge for us. And we've got our eyes focused on that and the context in that New York, Chicago, and Boston to make sure that we get that hard when that happens. So, like I said, we're in a great position. We're going to keep plugging along. We're going to keep building an amazing company. We're going to start building amazing products that change people's lives. And we'll be rewarded for it when the time is right.
There aren't many companies around where I would say to people right now is a good time to invest. But I feel like that you guys, even if there is some sliding to come, like the basics of your business and the strength of your balance sheet are two things that I think are well worth getting money behind. And, it's nice in a trashy market to see the bodies floating down the river beside you and know that yours isn't going to be amongst them.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you having a chat, and we'll keep in touch with things. As you start getting into that acquisitions mindset, there's going to be a whole lot of story to tell. So I'm looking forward to getting there.
Yeah. You'll have something from us by the end of the year for sure on that. So.
Beautiful. All right, man. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. Yeah. Take care.
All right.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.